group, shall I say. Today is, what is today?
19th.
Thursday.
Thursday. Ooh, what a surprise. 19th of February, 2009. Wow. How are we doing?
Awesome.
Finally, we got projector running, so I guess we can start. Shall we go around the block?
Sure.
Start.
Let's see, what did I do this week? I was fooling around with downloading the latest NVIDIA X driver or whatever, and I got a question. I downloaded this big file from NVIDIA, and then for some reason it wants to compile the new driver for X. It's like version 177 or something. What is it doing? Why is it, or what, you know, why? What am I compiling? Then there's some mod probe that they want to stick in there too, and I don't. Doesn't quite work yet. I'm just wondering what's going on.
External module.
Yeah, it's enabling the direct 3D acceleration from the card in Linux, which requires a specific module to be inserted into the kernel. That's the module that you're seeing, and it has to compile it because you're downloading the source code, not the precompiled version.
They've got kind of their own module for the kernel, like plug-in for the kernel.
It's the traditional way. Go ahead.
Yeah, that gives you direct access to the video card. Without that, you don't have direct access from the kernel to the video card, and you can't access all of those specialty things that make the NVIDIA driver work properly.
A module in the kernel is a lot like a driver in Windows for hardware devices.
Okay.
It's a good way to think of it. Yeah. Except you're not downloading, it's not like a pre-compiled like 32-bit.exe file which you're downloading in Windows. That's just a package file. It's actually you're compiling the source code. And it's kind of it's a different kind of structure, but it has a lot of advantages from a programmer's perspective because then you can look at the code and then you can tweak it and try to do like hardware acceleration on the device.
And the real
it's the only way to have direct access to the card itself. You can't run it forever necessarily.
You get direct access from the processor to the video card. Is that the that
from
the
software to the video card,
yeah,
you can probably think.
But you can only do that in the kernel, right? In the kernel level.
Yeah, the kernel locks everything down because if you've got access to the hardware, you can just, you know, lock up the machine. So the kernel limits are all interface to the hardware needs to go through the kernel. And they need extra things, extra access to their hardware that isn't built into the kernel. So they need to have this module to give that extra access.
Okay. And then it's being compiled for what reason? Why can't they just give you a
because it's
pre-compile, or is it because every computer is a little
because the kernel changes.
Every kernel it down, and then it's not
in Windows, the exact same thing is going on in Windows, except Windows never changes the kernel.
Oh.
Their kernel
so
is
you can
always
make a pre-compiled version of it, then.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
And when you download it from, like, the repositories, that's what you're getting. You're getting a pre-made version.
Okay.
What page? All
right. So that's where I got that far, and it didn't quite work, so I thought instead of wasting hours and hours, I'll just come here and ask a simple question and I'll have clues.
You might have run into something I ran into dealing with mod probe and depth mod, that I had to always, when I was using Myth TV, and I wanted to use the wireless card, on my wireless USB, I always had to run mod probe and depth mod, and just every time I never just saved it into the.
So to get it set up, when you turned it on.
Yeah,
when you
turned it on to get it, I had to run through all those steps again.
When you run
it in a script,
when you run the mod probe, it doesn't really set up anything. It just loads the module and it's done.
Yeah, but
and
the modules
are supposed to have in them code that says what hardware they work on. And when the kernel goes through, it's supposed to go through and look for modules that match the hardware. So it's supposed to automatically load them.
But that depends on the configuration of the kernel, though. What he's talking about is when you load a module into the kernel, it's on a session basis only. So when you reboot, you're resetting to a new session.
Right.
So you have to add it to, it's like, you have to add it to, it's like etc/modules.autoload.d or something. If there's a specific directory, and then there's like a config file, and you have to add the name of the module in there, and then it'll automatically load it on boot, and then.
Like, because it was NDS wrapper. Was that, is that to beat the...
Whatever module you're specifically looking for.
Yeah.
Whether it's a module for a video card or...
Etsy what?
Etsy, like, auto... Etsy modules autoload.d or something like that. If you Google it, you'll find the directory. I don't remember off.
Were you able to get to the point where you actually had it compiled? Or
yeah,
it said it compiled. Okay.
It ran, and I can't remember. There's an error that comes up in the XORG file.
It might be that there's a conflicting module installed, too. A lot of times, well, you were probably in X at the time.
Yeah.
And there's probably another module that's talking to
that. No, I closed
hardware.
X. I got that figured out.
Okay.
I'll close X because they told you that's a big
There
one.
Still might be another module
okay.
in memory at the time. It might not be used, so you might have to do a... RM mod or mod probe dash dash remove and remove a module that has to do with your video card to remove that one first.
Anything more exciting happen in your life this week?
Hey, we're talking Linux. I'm sorry if we're not getting over to your beer stuff.
Well,
I'm
sort of
blogging.
I'm just wondering if you're going to run into the fact that every time he boots up and make his NVIDIA driver work, he'll have to mod probe. Or if they, you think it'll be smart enough to know that.
It sounds like an everyday thing they're doing.
Yeah.
But anyway, all right, let's move on.
What else besides?
No, that was for computer stuff. That's about the extent of what I did.
My guess is there's a module. Just needs to be unloaded in the dark.
All right, pass.
Thank you.
I already did mine half an hour
ago. Well, repeat it. I wasn't here.
I was talking about, what was I talking about? XFCE Ubuntu. Running on a Pentium 3 866, and I was ripping DVDs.
Oh, you were open sourcing your stuff.
I was open sourcing. Well, yeah.
Backing them up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sorry.
Well, I was trying to get them so I could play my popcorn number. So, and I noticed that it looked better if instead of playing it through my DVD player, that it looked better if I, ripped it and re-encoded it. And I was saying it took like 40 hours to do one. Mm-hmm. You know, depending on the length of the movie, but one was the longest one was 40 hours.
Yeah, it might be better if you rip it out, should work. You know, you might have better servers there.
So you think it looked better because it was digital, or
I don't
the digital
know, just,
signal?
Well, because the DVD player does 40i, right?
Okay.
And so does the DVD, but it
which,
seemed like it almost
how
like
did you How do you have your DVD
well,
connected?
Just S-Video.
It's an S-Video cable, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a regular $30 DVD player.
Right. So
it just seemed like it was looking better.
And then you're playing it through the popcorn hour. How is that connected?
Oh, HDMI.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I don't think that has anything.
Well, that might actually, that does make a difference. Like on my projector, I've got a DVI cable and a VGA cable. And the VGA cable, you can actually see the difference. It's lower quality because it's an analog signal going from the computer to the projector.
See, I always thought it was like 4EI, 4EI didn't matter.
A digital 4EI will look better than analog 4EI
because
there's no no degradation at all. Whereas an analog, you'll get some.
You have even those DVD players that up convert that I guess they say triple line them or whatever, and it almost seemed like that was that the handbrake was almost doing that when it was putting
it. It could be doing that too.
So it just looked.
Right, and that'll look crisper, too, because then you can get that under digital.
I don't think that's correct, because then you don't have a need to buy Blu-ray. And then
no,
you
have
to spend your $35 of DVD. I don't think that's correct.
Well, I have the Fire Bay, so I don't need to buy Blu-ray.
The whole concept of Blu-rays is a little bit of a farce. I mean, if you get DVD players that can up-convert to the full resolution of, like, 1080p, then really... okay, so maybe a little bit of color depth might be the difference or whatever, but really, is the little bit of color depth difference
unless you have
worth
a really
extra $300?
Unless you have a big screen and you sit close to it, you're not going to notice the difference.
Well, it is the same argument what was Wii and PS3. Everybody was saying, oh, nobody will buy Wii because it's such a low resolution, it's going to look ugly. And PS3, everybody's going to buy because it's gorgeous. And it came down to a content. And if you have a content, if you don't have a content and it looks beautiful, guess what? You don't have a content. If you have a content and it looks ugly, well, people want to have a content. That's all.
Yeah.
And price. PS3 demo was like twice as much.
Yeah,
that's
ridiculous.
Cool. And the XFCE, if anybody's had a chance to use Ubuntu, it's just awesome on older hardware. It just,
yep.
It's just so fast.
Just a little bit problem to double around, you know, XFCE. It's just a little bit different, but it's another problem of XFCE. It's a problem getting used to stuff. Cool. How are you?
Nothing too exciting.
You didn't compile XOR driver? Sorry about that.
I just took a Windows from under your card. I set up some Linux database servers, a few nice ones over 50 or 60 gig RAM total between them. Two or three of them. That's
about it. Cool. Great. How about you? What did you want to say?
I guess I've been working on something for work. It's actually not really Linux kosher. I have it running in OS X right now on a virtual machine.
So tracking us right now.
Tracking software and a GPS antenna that we're trying to sell to sheriff's departments, basically.
That's a GPS receiver right there?
Yeah, it's a USB GPS modem. A GPS antenna, and then it comes with tracking software that will track all of your other antennas.
Does it do like a log at this time at this location?
Yeah, it'll log locations. You can get discrete antennas that magnetically mount to people's cars, basically like a little jack.
So it's to keep an eye on all the cars in the fleet or something?
All the cars in the fleet, or it seems like you could monitor. Like, if you had a warrant, you can lowjack somebody's car and follow them, basically.
Or, well, this is what you can do, actually. If you are not working for Sheriff's Department, you can actually use it and Twitter where you are. Actually, this could Twitter for you.
Yeah. You could keep track of your ex-wife.
Oh, of yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, your rebellious teenage kids.
Yeah. How does that communicate back, though?
There's a location for application that holds your location to a central server.
But you still need to be connected somewhere.
Yeah.
So this little thing
like just a cellular data
plan. Okay.
So you use cellular phone towers to communicate back?
Well, you can use cellular, you can use two-way radio, satellite if it's a big enough vehicle.
So how big is this thing you put on the car?
Well, it has to house the battery and a cellular.
Where do you put the thing? On the roof or what?
This you can mount basically anywhere on the side of the car. I think it works inside the car.
Yeah, probably like a GPS.
That's actually the GPS part.
But yeah, but what about the rest of the thing that transmits out to the cell tower?
That's usually mounted in the trunk.
Oh, okay, so this isn't just something you could magnetically stick under the car.
There is one.
Oh, there is?
It just sticks under the car. It's like this big.
There's one underneath the car right now, so he can't talk about it.
He'll demo it really well later.
So, right, yeah, I also sell
with the fast pickup.
Solar powered.
Oh, really? Yeah. Cool. Anything else? Any other fun?
Not so much. Working a lot of overtime.
Drinking some fun beers?
Some extra barrel.
Extra barrel. Cool. Well, I didn't do too much, but I managed to. It's kind of a sad story, but my wife was actually buying. At her work, they actually put a collection together, and they had enough money to buy somebody an ultra portable laptop, and I steer her to a Dell website. And as we see, this one is main page of Dell. And when we go to ultra portables, can you guys read what kind of operating systems are there on the same page?
Genuine Windows XP.
There's Ubuntu on the far left.
Ubuntu.
Yeah, on the same page, side by side.
And if you look, customized with Ubuntu up there, the nice big.
Yeah.
Two bottom options. It's so $249 and $299. That's not bad.
Well, there's the price. $250 is compared to $300.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And actually, I managed to persuade her to buy Ubuntu just for the purpose that notebooks or the netbooks are not really, you know, those are just communication devices, most likely. So, and I said, does my computer do anything what you would do on the other operating system? She said, yeah. So I said, well, you still have the benefit of not having a viruses. And I guess there it is.
Well, we got the one in the third column that says customize with XP. What does that mean?
Customize the laptop details with Windows XP. Yeah, like that, or RAM, or stuff like that.
Just, you are looking at the wrong column. That's all what I can tell you.
Okay.
All right. You don't care about anything except
Ubuntu, which is awesome.
As well as that there is a Mini 12. So that one is Mini 9 inch screen. And this one is 12 inch. And this one is the same thing, actually. Ubuntu and Windows, side by side.
So laptops started out small, grew to the size of a desktop, and now they're shrinking right now.
Did the other ones, I say they have the
actually, price started.
Do you know if they drop in price to Ubuntu at all?
I have no idea. So, this one is
I took an upturn there
$479. So, if you go this way, so it drops out.
Massively huge style.
Yeah, so I just, you know, it was just nice that you actually don't, people don't have to hunt and peck wherever it is, and so you actually can go there on the same page like anybody else is buying. You can actually have it side by side. It is not on XPS yet.
One just tidbit, if you ever do buy a laptop from Dell, like I got this one from Dell, and this is before they were offering Ubuntu, or maybe it was, but they didn't have it on this one. If you actually call up or talk to them, you can get it without Windows. It'll come with like a DOS CD or something, and you save $5, you can save like $100. So,
wow.
If you're stuck with Linux on it.
To just avoid the operating system.
Yeah, they don't give you a Windows license with it.
The Windows tax.
Free DOS. Yeah, they give you a free DOS. But you save, you know, almost $100. I think it was there $70 or something.
Is there a bigger savings when you go for a Vista machine? You know, like non-Vista?
Oh.
Not buying Vista, that is.
Right, I heard it was more expensive actually to not get Vista.
It was more expensive to not get Vista.
That's why I ran some Vista for a while. That might.
I don't know if they can do
because
that.
Because of the whole bundled software.
I don't know.
They pay for the premium.
Well, I've seen that where it says that you put XP on there for $100.
It depends on if you account for pain and suffering in the equation.
That's true. Yeah. Pain and suffering all aside, you know. That's a good 5-6 hours of unconfiguring things.
Because I know the Microsoft agreement with vendors like that is that if the customer does not want the Microsoft license, they must give them a rebate or a refund.
I think they're forced to do that.
But along with that, they also say that they're not able to divulge how much their Windows licenses actually cost them. So in most cases, it's not costing Dell as much for the Windows license as you're getting the refund for. So they're actually biting on some of it.
Yeah.
So I
just
mileage may vary. Yeah.
I just thought it was very nice move, very positive move, and probably
is that the first time ever that something on that scale
the first time
Linux
ever
has happened.
The first time ever I saw it just side by side. Yes. Yes.
Cool.
So it is great, I think.
Yeah.
And I did a newsletter. There was some actually. Some interesting article in his letter, but we go through his letter and talk about. But
there's some interesting stuff in here.
Yeah, and then yes, I brewed a beer. Yes, on Saturday. Sorry to say that Linux went on the back burner, and I brewed a beer. It was Bohemian Pilsner. We shall see how Bohemian we are going to be.
I knew it.
You won. Yes,
I knew it.
Absolutely. Well, the second week, you know, I had a urge. Cool, and that's all I have.
Cool.
I, in the last half an hour or so, got Voxy working.
Oh, sweet, yeah.
With streaming Netflix. So this is movie next. It's Nicolas Cage.
You have a Netflix account?
Yeah, I signed up for one just to see.
So you're actually right now renting a Netflix movie?
Right.
But with Voxy?
Right, with Voxy.
So is this on OS X Voxy or Linux
Voxy? Yes, this is OS X. I haven't downloaded Voxy for Linux yet.
what's Foxy? Just like a video front, or like a center front end or something?
Yeah, it's like a DVR functionality, except for it's way, way more versatile, because you can do video from...
So media player, okay.
Yeah. There's like, by default...
With a social network,
it's an infrared.
You can see when your friends are watching it and recommend too.
So you can, like, this is all the streaming video sources. There's BBC, CBS, CNN, Comedy Central, Hulu, Netflix, MySpace, MyFeed, Revision 3 if you're like a Dig Nation fan.
Oh, I love that. The Dig Reel is the best.
Does this work with the Linux?
Juiced? I don't know. I haven't tried that one.
So that's all from Boxy?
Yeah. The Boxy provides the interface. All the sources that you saw is this.
All that stuff is open, right? This is just bringing it all together.
This is like a fancy interface to stream content online.
It's like a competition, or not a competition, but competitive man.
Eventually, what I'd like to do is I want to get like
a real killer.
If I could find like a real cheap like Mac Mini or something like that. The Mac Mini is like 8 inches by 8 inches by 3 inches. It's a tiny little form factor machine. Use like Boxy to hook it up. It's got a DVI connection on it. And then hook that up to like a big screen TV. That's the long term goal.
Use so it'd just be like a mini monitor.
Right. Boxy also plays Xvid, DivX, you know, H.264, just about any form of codec that you can throw at it, as well as all of your music and everything, artists and albums like from your iTunes accounts. So like, you know.
Popcorn have a screen on it, or is it just a box?
Is this free or
Boxy is free. Yes, but it is a you have to sign up.
A little revolt like
when I signed up, it took probably 3 or 4 weeks for me actually to get the email for the login. Because what they said is it's been enormously popular and they wanted to scale their growth.
You know, I
by
think that they
the number of people
I think that they opened it already. That it used to be that you had to wait the like waiting period.
I signed up a while ago and it was instant. So
yeah. Was it?
A couple weeks time. Yeah. Actually, after you showed up the first time.
Okay. It's Boxy.tv. B-O-X-E.
So that remote is part of your computer?
Yeah.
Came with the computer?
Yeah.
Well, you know, you were saying about Beats TV. This would be like a front end of Beats TV.
Yeah.
It's not a ripping or
it's
not
it's like another interface from
essentially, instead of running your own server that does all the TV, this just goes onto the internet and gets
yeah, that's the other difference. MIF TV is a source of cable TV
or
satellite.
I think that it would go also if you were to have your own server, it would actually cache whatever is on your server.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I have a 1 terabyte RAID 5 server at home that has a bunch of perfectly legal backed up copies of DVDs that I
own. Open source?
Yes, open source, yes. And that's... you know, what you can do in the settings of Boxy is you can set it up to add certain other media sources. So then, like, if it's a network source, you can add it as, like, a Samba share or an NFS share or something like that. And then, you know, you can watch your library of movies on the interface. So you've got your front end, which is the box that just plays it from whatever source. And then you've got the, you know, the back end, which is the storage.
What are the requirements on that? Could I run a Pentium 3 866?
Looking at those graphics, I'm going to say no.
Hey, Adam, I have a bad news for you. It's written in Python.
Jesus Christ.
Who doesn't like Python?
Really? Really?
It's not that he doesn't like Python. He doesn't like how some programs are written. Because
Python is the BB of the new millennium.
It doesn't.
It allows people who shouldn't program to write programs.
It doesn't force you to actually confirm a certain standard.
I think some of my favorite softwares written in Python. It's just some of my least favorite software.
It's like one of the best languages, in my opinion, there are right now.
It's great, but at the other time, it allows.
It could be abused.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I have so many programs that just kind of go away and throw errors.
Well, that's why you have the all the same feature and restore. Right after that,
isn't that built into Python? Even mono yes, drives me nuts to some degree. You know, when you have to go to the command line to start a program to figure out what went wrong, and somebody didn't code it right, and actually that was a Fedora packaging issue with Banshee that forced me.
Hey,
to do that.
At least you can go to the command line. Unlike Windows, you type in a command there and it crashes. Too bad.
You know what? I have a news for you. There is a. Mono develop 2.0 beta.
Did it have a debugger?
Going on. I don't know. I was
the beta doesn't the full release will. That's the thing. Their beta doesn't have a working debugger.
But 1.0 didn't have working debugger, but did it?
Yes, it did.
I think so.
Everything has a working debugger except for 2.0 beta. That's the only version that doesn't.
Of course, it's supposed to be running beta. Yeah, that's supposed to be running beta like that.
Question
of course.
Did that Hulu and Netflix support come native to the install? Or did you have to go out and install more plugins?
The link to the website was there, but you have to log into your
box. Oh, yeah.
So,
but
do you need to have a account on Hulu?
You don't have to,
don't have
but
to.
For like rated R content, you have to log in, which is free.
We see you.
So if you're an avid porn guy, you know, you gotta...
Or if you want to watch Family Guy.
Family's practically, Family Guy's practically porn. It's a terrible show.
That
what? You need to leave.
What's that? That remote comes with your laptop, you bought it?
Yes, it did.
That's actually $1,000 worth of
Yeah.
No, it was $20.
Huh.
Just could have skipped it.
And here's the cool thing. It works on every Apple, just straight up. So you can use
it. Yeah, you have to sync it, it's just playing.
Yeah, his will go to front end, not front end. What's the app?
What's it called?
I'm trying to think.
Front row.
Yeah, front row.
There's an Apple interface that has a similar DVR functionality, except it just looks at your iPhoto photos and your iMusic library.
That reminds me of like Elijah. The same. UI like Elijah
front row.
That looks like mid front end.
It's
mid
TV.
It looks like they just like changed the theme, and that's it.
Yeah.
There's a theme that looks identical.
Netflix thing too, which would be nice to stream. So I have a 360. So
I like the Apple solution pretty well. Apple TV is the TV version, and which plays out to 720p, and you can rent 720p movies directly on the device, which is kind of nice.
Oh, so Apple TV does 720p now?
Yeah, it always did.
Oh, I thought it did 480 when it first came out.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you. Mm-hmm. How's the new daddy doing?
Pretty good. I don't know. Baby's, over 2 weeks old now, so...
And as a remote control in the house, you just need to trade it? Kind of expensive remote control, should I say?
Yeah. This is number 3, so we have two diaper remote controls right now.
Yeah.
Throw that away. Yes. No, we're all doing pretty well. Mom's not getting a whole lot of sleep, but I managed to sneak an hour here or there, so when she's not watching.
We see dedication. You are going to have a case of beer for me then.
Alright, so other than that, I've been watching the beta release of the Eureka backup here. I have designs to go in and actually write a CIFS or Samba Share plugin for the program, because I'm getting sick of hacking my own scripts together to mount shares to do backups to. And
I'm
addicted to the program.
Is
I love
Java,
what's it called? Eureka. It's Eureka backup. It's a backup utility written in Java that can configure incremental and differential backups and recoveries, and I think it's really slick. You can get some pretty complicated setups.
It doesn't
going.
Have autosave feature. Sorry, it's Java. If it crashes, it tells you it crashed.
You know, from a Windows machine, you can just point to a share of a network.
It's Java. You just throw a try catch on a
backup
back
server.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's a client, but you.
Or I mean,
but it's got built-in FTP support and then local right now. That's it. So it's I played around with setting an FTP server up, and
is that like SSH support or like
anything? No, that's another thing. Either I need to write a. I was reading around a little bit, and the guy's got an API written.
Sure.
You can essentially write a plugin, create an XML file, and it should show up in the interface as use my new file system plugin I wrote here. So I'm gonna mess around with that in a couple weeks here. But he's releasing version 7, which is some kind of huge memory management improvement.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, tell him about JCraft.
I was going through some of the codes in like Italian or something. I don't know what it was, but it was.
So send him a pizza.
I'll have to figure it out. Yeah. So I've been messing with that, and I guess the other thing was yesterday or the day before, I found, going through my emails that I hadn't been watching here, Fluendo had sent me a notice. I bought their codec pack almost a year ago, and they now have pre-packaged codecs you can get from them. Instead of, it used to be you downloaded the C compiled or the C plugins, you actually had to move them to the folder.
Fluentershop.
Yep. You can get the free MP3 ones there as a plugin, too. But they've got them pre-compiled, pre-packaged for Ubuntu, Debian, Fedora, SUSE, Mandriva, and even Solaris.
Did they have DVD? Are they like more efficient or something? Or
it's basically GStreamer codecs is what they are. It's not that they're more efficient, it's just that they're legal.
Never,
I don't know. I mean, it's...
So you bought 32-bit. Can you actually
there
say...
There is 64-bit. I can download the 64-bit or the 32 without having to buy new ones. Yeah, I can.
So download it before your thing expires.
If you go to their homepage there, the end-user products, they're announcing there's a DVD player as well here. They don't have it done yet, but they're saying it'll be available to OEM as well as just consumer level, which is probably a first as far as I'm aware of.
So I can delete my libDVD.
CSS.
Actually, it's some kind of funny program. It's RPM file. I don't play.
Yeah. So it's. Right now, if you want, you know, quote unquote legal DVD playback, the only way to get it is if you buy OS from Dell.
Yes.
And maybe one or two. I know Mandriva. You can get it with. And
I own so many copies of PowerDVD.
Yeah, so all you have to do is say, you know, I got the software here, go with. But I, you know, it is kind of a nice thing to see. And if it's easy to get, easy to integrate, you know, my guess is that more either Linux shops or distributions will start integrating it.
Yeah, it'd be nice if they just paid a bunch of money and so you know, we can see just how far we went. You know, when we started it to meet, you know, 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. You know, what were we talking about? We're talking about, maybe somebody will be selling hardware with a Linux on.
Remember that discussion?
Yeah. You know, and right now we are saying, it would be nice if somebody would get me this application. You know, so.
Yeah, I was pretty happy to when going through their site here to see these things on here. So I have a codec support on my Fedora VM at home now, so
cool.
I can play my MP3 files. Don't have to worry about it. But and now I can put up a Solaris machine and listen to my MP3s on it too. So.
See, Solaris is actually kind of cool, especially for database servers. A lot of people have been telling me they're using it.
It's
properly operating.
Once it starts up, ZFS takes a little bit to get going, but it's.
That's the big stuff.
If it's a server though, you're not rebooting.
Yeah,
it.
ZFS is.
And it's super.
Still like snapshot support.
They've actually got some nice tools in, was it 2008.11 for managing some of the ZSF stuff?
I haven't really used it too much.
But they actually built some GUI interfaces to do some of those ZFS things instead of click. So
that's really what the new file system, ButterFS, is basing itself off of, is ZFS.
Cool.
If someone would just open source their stuff, they'd probably do a lot better. But
very nice.
Open source Java. What more do you want?
They like to
Java's fine.
They like to shoot themselves in the foot over and over again before they finally give up and say, "All right, now they." So.
All right. There's no more space left in my foot. I guess
everybody's circumvented us, anyways. Here you go. Now it's open source. Yeah.
When you were going through this, I saw
almost like they see it as giving up. It's like, all right, it's fine.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of with the OpenJDK, you know.
They
had their certain. You could get it for free and use it, but they had their restrictions on it. And eventually, people just started to work around it, and then
they were
like,
to the point
now
where
you can have it. So.
Yeah, they were to the point where they had a working, completely free version, and Sun went, "Oh, that's no good," because the free version you could actually compile the native code too. You didn't actually need the JVM at all. It was compiled in with the program.
You can always get the Java source code, though, right?
There's like parts of it you can't.
You always could.
I don't know if you can
get the source code. I don't think it was open source.
There's
certain, it wasn't open source, but you could always get it.
You could get it.
There are still a few.
Because there's certain things, if you go download the source.
What they're doing is they're replacing those pieces with the pieces from the
OpenJDK.
OpenJDK versions.
There's some
See, actually,
Ice-T thing or something, is that part of it?
That's the free version.
Oh, it's the solid state drive.
This is 9, but if I picked the XP and I say customize it with Ubuntu, it actually kept the instant saving also for $35. And I was able to up my memory, my hard drive.
So for so 400 bucks, you can
get a
laptop
with a solid state.
32 gig.
For 64 gig solid state for another $50.
Yeah,
that's
wow.
That's actually pretty impressive.
Usually don't see a drive. An 8 gig solid state drive would cost you $400 at the time. Well, not anymore, but you know.
Well, those first EE PCs, they came with a 4 gig, and that 8 gig was like big boost.
Yeah.
Man's Triple E's got 20 total, the 16 and a 4.
Yeah, that was the.
Yep. Apple's markups for solid state drives are horrible. They're super, super expensive.
That's Apple for you.
Yeah.
It comes with a wheel on them.
Let's see. I want bit number 3. Oh, wheel it. Okay, plug it in. Yep.
Because you need to have a hook of dexterity. You need to have tactile.
Onto Python here before. I think Conduit.
It's awesome.
Written in Python, I believe, right?
See? Well, you love Conduit.
I like the idea of Conduit. I just can't get it to work.
And
it doesn't actually throw any error messages or anything. It just kind of sits there and looks at
it. Well, try catch. Conduit.
It's a synchronization program, and it's actually pretty slick because
it has different endpoints and source points, and you just
like either folders. They've got built-in plugins for like your F-Spot or Picasa pictures or your Tomboy notes.
YouTube logins. They've got if you've got a Palm.
Basically, RSync with a fancy interface. Okay. So you drag your Tomboy notes into the synchronization area, and then you drag in like a network connection, and it just draws a line between them.
Facebook
so it visually
stuff.
Represents all
so
things.
So it's like just all connections between all these different programs and devices.
Problem I'm having with it is on the Ubuntu side, it seems to work. On Fedora, I cannot get it to recognize a network shared synchronization. So essentially what you do is I'm trying to synchronize my photos. So I drag my photos into the work area, then drag the network connection into it, and it outputs that synchronization as an Avahi, what do they call that? The zero config browser, it uses that to broadcast it over the network. And Ubuntu will see it, but another Fedora machine won't pick it up, so I don't know if there's something.
Do you have the service enabled? The zero conf service?
I didn't look at the service.
You might want to take a look and see if that's enabled, because otherwise that zero conf might not even work.
Okay, because I know I have the zero conf packages installed, but I didn't check
the
service.
I don't know that the service is started up by default.
That might be, because it's broadcasting it, and it just can't pick it up. So that might be something. I'll look at that later. But so on Ubuntu, I see it, but when I connect to it, try to synchronize it, it just kind of sits there. It doesn't do anything. So I'm trying to figure out why it's not doing anything. So, and it's still technically, beta, but it's been around for a couple of years.
Yeah,
so I would think at least,
beta.
Yeah,
it's Python.
Python is a beta. You guys are too harsh.
They need to go back to Perl.
Perl.
Why do you need Python when you've got Perl?
Yeah, absolutely. You need Python.
Hold on.
That's the whole reason.
You don't like Python, but you like Perl.
But I love
it. Do you know why? Because nobody can read it.
Nobody can. I can't even read it.
Which
one you can't read?
Perl.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You don't get complete beginners writing Perl programs usually. Okay.
That's what I started on.
I was going to say, that's what I learned on it was Perl.
Finished on.
Yeah.
That's when I broke
my
screen.
I had a couple programs a year or two ago I wrote in Perl, and if I opened them now, I wouldn't understand. They're all regular expressions.
Hopefully you commented it out.
It's like
equals tilde slash.
What does this do? I don't know, but it makes a 12 gig file. It's full of all kinds of stuff. So.
Sounds like a planet.
I think it parses the internet.
And tries to back it up too.
Every duck.
Do it with pearls.
I actually got my projector control to work through the serial interface. So I've got a serial cable running from my MythBox to the projector, and through software I'm able to fully control the projector. So what I did was I went to the LERT configurations, the Linux infrared remote something, I don't know what C stands for. and set it up so that the power button on the MythBox remote will actually turn on the projector. And then I set up all my other buttons, and then I went into the Myth main menu, and their menu system is all XML driven, and you can actually alter what options are there just right in the XML. So I modified the XML to have a projector off command. So right from the main menu, I can just select projector off, click on it, and everything closes down. What that does is it completely gets rid of the projector remote and gives full control to the PC. Turns out the problem I was having, why it didn't work before, there were actually two problems, which is the reason why it's difficult to troubleshoot. First off, the serial ports on Linux, apparently, well, there's a maximum speed, and it's like 115,200. That's like the maximum speed of the serial port. But manufacturers wanted to go above that. So what they did was they added a non-standard base speed for the serial port, and then they used a divisor or divisor to divide that base speed. Now, normally it assumes that it's set to 115,000, but the base was actually set to this other number, which wasn't a even divisor or divisor of the first number, so I was getting not exactly 9600 baud, I was getting like 7000 baud, which isn't good enough. So I reset the base speed, got that all working, and then I found out that this stupid document that I had from Optima, the maker of my projector, was the wrong spec sheet. It said it was the right spec sheet, but it wasn't. So I was sending it the wrong commands. So I found another similar projector, and I looked, and all the menus were identical to the one I had, whereas the other spec sheet, the menus were not identical. So I tried that out, and I was able to get it to work. So
did you get a $50 discount from your...
I should have gotten a $50 discount, because I probably worked on that thing for 8 to 10 hours getting it to work. But I got it, darn it. I was dedicated. Well, the problem being that something goofs up the projector remote. Like, it reads some light somewhere. I can't figure out what it is. And it disables the projector remote. Which is really annoying because the projector is on the ceiling. Now, that's fine. Except I'm moving and the ceilings are vaulted. So now, I'm going to have the, you know, the alternate remote,
you know,
with the rubber finger.
If you would have very, very sports-like child, you know, jump
just
there.
On the shoulders,
yeah, just jump there,
hit the power, Johnny. Yeah. But anyway, now I got it so that it completely works through the PC and shouldn't need the remote at all.
You know, I think, okay, well, I wanted to suggest that I set my brood there, but he needed it, but, okay, well.
No, I'm good, thanks.
Okay. Yeah.
I appreciate the offer, but.
Cool. Hmm. Sounds like a plan. Do we have any XOR discussion ready? Ready, so okay, whatever he wants to do with it.
It's a little tech TV guy before they turn TV.
Yes, it used to be tech TV, and then right now it's Leo.tv.
Is it the Leo guy?
No. It used to be Patrick Norton, but he left.
Classic.
TV.
Yeah. It was actually a technology show instead of a
training
show.
It is technology.
It's a good show.
So,
Robert Harris. The channel was Robert Harris instead of.
I don't have time to watch
it anymore
because I need a group here.
Oh, we all have priorities.
Yeah, technology. You know, who cares? Who cares?
You said it used to be Patrick Norman.
Yes.
Yeah. You from Speed Service?
Yeah.
I Leo Laporte. That was the other guy.
Laporte.
Yep. I watched. I listened to a lot of his podcasts. Yeah. So.
Really,
he's got 11.
Leoville or whatever.
Yeah, Leoville.tv I think is his main URL. But I mean, he's got This Week in Tech and Mac Break Weekly and. You know, there's a Linux one, and there's a Windows one.
I think it's twit.tv.
Twit.tv is the main Twit network one.
actually used to learn something watching that show.
Yeah, you used to learn.
And now it's more like the Hulu commercial with Alec Baldwin. Have you seen that?
That is so
That's funny. Basically all I get out of G1 now.
Is that the one where he's like a, in the, what, aliens or something?
Turn your brain to money.
Yeah,
it's
Super Bowl.
Yeah, I thought
the weirdest way to promote something as cool as Hulu.
Alec Baldwin.
I mean, seriously.
I think that's what it is. It's him from the show, and it's... If you've seen the show, it's pretty...
Okay, so I'm going to TV. Awesome. Yeah, Detroit. With security. Now, with Steve Gibson?
Well, I used to, but then he sort of... Steve Gibson? Yeah, started to stutter too much, and he...
The security guy?
From the beginning, it was great, actually. Yeah. He was saying how TCP/IP is working, and he was talking about encryptions and virtualization.
Well, yeah,
from the beginning. But then it sort of got out of the I don't care what security issues, but he just threw stuff out of the
You don't like him either?
No.
Jeez! I think he's awesome. So, two people that
Did he buy a spinner from him?
No. Why? No.
Yeah, because that's almost what it is right now, all of them.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Jeez! He talks about it, because he needs money to do the show, but...
No, he's through the show, he's promoting his spin right. That's
yeah.
It's a great.
So you don't like either one until it's Steve Gibson.
Well, no, he's a great guy when he's at around.
I've never seen the show. Like, he's probably pretty informative, but, like, he's had a lot of. There's been numerous situations where he's really. There's been news stories where he's just really wrong. And I can't think of the word, where he just makes it sound like he's a real travesty or something really bad.
Over exaggerated.
Oh, yeah, that's
yeah. And you know, that's from the beginning he was very good. You know, he did know what he was talking about, and he knew how to say it clear. But then he has a show every week, so you need to put a content there. So what am I going to do? Well, there's nothing new to do, so we need to make something up. Yes. And then let it start.
In the computer security circles, he's kind of like regarded as a joke.
Well,
but if you learn something from him,
there's nothing wrong to it.
It's not like he's necessarily wrong about certain things. It's just, if you get value out of him, then.
Was there some specific event? Like, was he hacked or something that made
The big thing was he made a big deal. I remember it was about when Windows XP was coming out, that supported raw socket support. And apparently that was going to be the end of the world, and hackers were just going to take over Windows, and everyone's going to be insecure, and that's not really how it works. But that was one of the big things.
But he stopped it. You know, he put his foot down and he stopped it. Everything is good.
Yeah.
World made equilibrium, and we are happy to be living again.
Yeah. No, he does talk about the raw socket.
Still.
Okay, let's move on.
Let's just shut our computers down and then we'll say, what do we have them for? We can't connect to them. We can't do anything.
So who's going to start?
Start what?
Well, the Debian
the
5 was released.
Debian?
I don't use that crap.
Does anybody use Debian?
Everybody who's been using Linux,
Ubuntu is based on Debian.
It's pretty used. In Silicon Valley, it's used a lot.
So the Debian is the package manager part of Ubuntu?
No.
It's a distribution.
It's Ubuntu. Like, it's what Ubuntu is based off of.
It's like the mother of.
Yes.
A lot of different distributions, including
I thought it was either Debian or RPM.
Well, that's the package manager. The package manager came from Debian.
If you go back to Ubuntu 6.06, you're probably using the current version of Debian. So the plus side is it's going to be really stable. I mean, because
everything
in it's been
about 2 years since they've updated.
But you know, you don't have to mount your own USB stick anymore.
No. It's not so much a desktop.
The package manager the packages for the install are just named the same. Because they originally came from Debian Linux, so they're named Debian package files.
Debian things. Absolutely.
Okay. Ubuntu is just not a base distribution, it comes from something else. Whereas Red Hat.
Think of it the same way.
SUSE's a base.
Same way, RPM actually stands for Red Hat. Package manager.
Okay.
So it came from Red Hat. Debian DB came from Debian Linux.
Interesting.
It's okay. Everything's fine.
Debian is kind of like Red Hat.
Yeah, we are going to call Steve Gibson right now, as our world would reach equilibrium. So that's okay.
Take a look at the map of all the different Linux variants. You'll see exactly where Debian came from. Yeah. Actually,
Debian's kind of like Red Hat Enterprise, and Ubuntu is kind of like Fedora.
Sure. Let's move on.
Ubuntu is based off the testing branch of Debian.
Yeah, let's move on.
Hold on.
If you're using Ubuntu,
now.
You're
okay.
A beta tester, really.
Our Fedora.
Yep, same thing.
Our Fedora man is going to tell us about Debian.
No, I'm just going to, I'm looking for a picture here. Yeah. A picture is worth a thousand words.
Yeah.
Like a tree?
Yeah, they
yeah.
have one.
Debian is one of the first branches from the...
Yep, that's exactly what I'm looking at, is the Linux distro time.
Another branch is your Red Hat, so there's another branch.
Distro time.
SUSE is considered as its own.
Where's
as
that?
As it's Slackware, it's considered as its own.
They
have a lot of derivatives that...
WineReviews.net, I don't know how that... So, it's going to be kind of hard to see. I'll just...
If there's still Gentoo.
Holy shit. You can see these are all different Linux distros.
Yeah, it's sort of...
I had installed it on Xbox. But
this is the Red Hat.
Was Debian? No, it was
right at the base. This is
what they call it.
So all of these distros.
It was a Gentoo derivative of the original Xbox.
Oh,
it
was
Debian.
All
no.
of these distros actually.
There's a specialized distribution
what's
put on the original Xbox, and it was a Gentoo derivative.
Those are some of the other ones.
I think it was called
SUSE.
Like
there's SUSE here.
I can't remember.
Blackware. Ridiculous operating system. But
so there's a bunch of other ones that
Gentoo
kind of.
Well,
some
people used to love it because you
compile
it on your own hardware.
Debian
take
is
it.
Ridiculous.
Well,
I mean, besides things, it makes
well,
sense.
It's really
like
it's
kernel
XAD,
a couple like
there.
Things.
If you like GCC's
anyone that's under this branch,
24 hours,
Debian packages. Anyone that's under this branch.
I think they made a lot of leaps and bounds when they created their live CD. To do the base. But one of the biggest disadvantages of Gentoo is the initial install, because you've got to compile
like that's the base
thing from the beginning. But a while ago, they came out with a Live CD, which basically has a lot of base of like the most common i3 32-bit downloaded RPM bin files, or whatever.
Where's that?
I mean, whatever the compiled versions are.
I don't know.
And then that's in turn.
Yep,
help them get up and running, and then from there you can add it on programs.
You know, Gentoo used to be very popular distribution.
Yeah, and there was a problem with their one of the lead programmers had like a heart attack. There was some major health problem
that
like really set them back, and I think that's when they really lost steam, and that's when Ubuntu kind of took off.
Yeah,
so I think that was one of the things that really kind of hit them.
Yeah, and right now I know that they lost their. Foundation as a non-profit organization status, and you know, it just was going down the hill. I don't know, you know, where they are right now, but it's in sort of
what
Gentoo. You know, while you were guys looking at picture, you know, which so we were moving on. So there was something about Red Hat and Microsoft patent or they partnered up. And the thing was, they were saying that actually Red Hat didn't actually sign up any licensing agreement. So they were saying in virtualization, we are partnered with you, and we are going to work on interoperability. That's a big word for me.
Yeah, I read that, and it's just kind of, they both decided that it's the best if we validate one version of your software on ours, and you validate one version of our software on yours.
Yeah,
it's just a good business sense.
Well, somehow the Microsoft acknowledged that they are mutual customers.
I don't think there's a whole lot of work to be done. I think it's more of a corporate feel good. You can call someone.
That's exactly what
this doesn't work good. And instead of getting we don't support that operating system, you get what kind of
error? We'll look at it.
We'll look at it. Then they hang up.
Open up a ticket. We'll close it in about a month.
So, I mean, one of the things they were saying, well, guess what, you guys know, well, you had to exchange money here and there. Even though I do not understand, because I think that Novell was actually a recipient of more money than Microsoft. So, from that point, Novell was actually getting more money. But there was some indemnation thing with the Novell. So, they were saying that this is much better deal, whatever it is.
Red Hat pretty much came out and said to Microsoft, we'll deal with you, but you put patents in there and we're out. Because Red Hat has kind of got some ideals and they just won't back down.
Actually, Red Hat was trying for codexes. You know, the, about a year and a half ago, they tried to release a desktop operating system. And it was hinging on the codexes, codec support. And they wanted to actually have some codec support from Microsoft. And Microsoft was just pushing that they want to have a patent in there. And Brendan just walked away.
Yep, exactly.
So then, I guess Microsoft learned that if they want something, that's what it is. Cool, good. Miro 2.0. Miro is another... Is that here?
Didn't like it.
It's actually another player. It's a streaming player. And I know that Mozilla invested some money into it some time ago. And so they have actually 2.0. There is your Hulu over there. And Family Guy probably.
So it's another version of Oxy?
No, it's a Miro. It's a player.
Oh, it's just a player. Okay.
It's a streaming
competitor
player.
To Oxy.
Yes.
It's less than a whole on media center thing. It's more of an application that you use. You probably wouldn't use it on your TV, whereas Boxy, you'd throw it on your TV. Yeah. You would use it.
It depends what you want to do with it.
Is it Miro,
you
platform? Yeah.
Excuse me?
It was, wasn't it?
Yes, it's based on Mozilla, I think. Yes.
Is it browser based?
I don't know exactly how that works, but yeah,
I've got the 1.whatever version installed because it was in the Ubuntu repos, and
it's not a web app.
I'm afraid to start it just because the first time I started it, it just stole my processor.
In the older day, I started it up and I wasn't sure actually what it's supposed to be doing.
I couldn't get it to play anything.
It used to be called something else.
It used to be
called
the Boxy.
I'd like to be more cautious too.
I thought it looked nice.
8 months ago, I was running it for a while. Worked fairly well as a BitTorrent client, and basically just a stream aggregator. And it had a decent interface.
Yeah.
I'm just playing around with Boxy now. That is much nicer than Miro.
I like the interface. It's very clean.
Yeah.
I know that Mozilla has their entirely own widget set and everything too, so it might be using that. It might not actually be browser based. I don't know. I haven't looked at it.
So it was over there. There was an article about using DFO diagramming. It appeared to be a very nice article, very long article. So,
It's kind of useful.
Kind of.
It's kind of difficult to use.
Is it?
I like OpenOffice Draw better for creating simple stuff.
I think they were talking about OpenOffice, but they were saying that DI is better than OpenOffice.
Well, it's better at some things.
Keeping
depends what you're doing.
I mean. Yeah, I guess for the stuff that I was doing, the OpenOffice Draw actually worked better. But I can see there are some things where DI.
The problem is for simple drawings, you're going to use an OpenOffice drawing program or something else. For software diagrams, you're going to use an IDE's diagramming tool. For electrical drawings, you're going to use something else. So,
yeah.
Question is kind of, what are you going to use DF for? It's too complicated for little stuff.
It's not quite
specialized enough for other things.
The only thing that would be really useful is if they actually had some nice clip art Nikon pieces, and they don't. So it's like, there's your niche, and you missed it. You missed the boat.
Don't worry, somebody will get as a new developer, they'll start to rewrite it.
This has been around for a long time, and it really hasn't made any years.
Okay, let's go. There was another article about Buddy, personal finance, financial application without
headache. Not a headache, sorry.
Well, if you have a headache, you install it, and your headache, it's like aspirin, this thing. Your headache will go away. And so I heard about it, it's Java-based, so it's perfect, no exceptions. I would say that on Linux, probably the best financial application is MoneyDance, but you have to pay for it. You have to pay like $15 for it.
Mint.com.
Excuse me?
Mint.com.
Mint.com. I would No, I think I would stay away from there. But, well, if you enjoy it, it's great. It's a web-based, you can track your investments, you know, you write your social security number, stuff like that.
Yeah. I'm sure it's not any different than the TurboTax I type everything into every day.
Yeah, I guess. There was something about raw image tools for Linux. I actually, there on this article, there's nothing really new, but it's
there.
Well,
that number two there is kind of interesting. I installed that on Amanda's camera.
Did you?
What it is it's not a replacement firmware, but it's almost like a program that runs on top of the existing firmware.
Yes.
So it loads off of the flash disk or the SD card, and will give you additional features over what's already there.
And you can actually save it raw.
Yep, and that's one of the main things on that camera. There's no option to save in RAW. With this firmware or this program, you can actually save your images RAW. And there's a bunch of other things, like there's a few ISO settings and shutter speeds that you can't get with the built-in settings or the built-in firmware, and this will override it so that you can get those additional settings.
Yes.
You can also run scripts on your... camera.
I heard about it, and I guess I probably discovered that because I already can save RAW, so I sort of went through it, I read it.
Yep. Yeah. They really say that the most useful thing about that is the scripting, because you can set your camera up to take a shot every, you know, 2 minutes or something. Mm-hmm. Or they have like a motion sensor script that you can put in there, get the results of the motion sensor, take photos on motion sense, and all sorts of stuff like that.
Standalone camera.
Yep.
They can?
Yep.
But it works only on Canon.
Monitors the pixels, and when it senses more of a, or greater than a certain threshold of change between two pixels, then it considers that the frames have changed.
You need to have a Canon camera which is using this processor.
Yep.
Three processors.
Right, and most Canon cameras that you get are going to have that. Anything in about the 150 to... whatever range are going to have that.
So like digital cameras or like DSLRs?
SLRs do have those same ones. Okay. A friend of ours has remember the model number. It's about he paid about $1,500 for it, so it's a nice camera, and it has the Digic 3.
Wow.
Which Amanda's camera has the Digic 3 as well, and that was like $350.
Is it like a Rebel or something?
No, it's PowerShot.
Have the first Rebel, and I don't think that I have this processor there. So, but I can shoot it in RAW, but I cannot do those sort of motion.
It's not pretty, but does what it needs to do.
Yeah.
Could you break her?
Nope, because it doesn't replace the firmware that's there. It loads on top of it. So what you can do is. If the SD card is in and the SD card is write protected, it will read from the SD card and look for a certain file. If the certain file is there, it'll run it when the camera boots up. So all you have to do is switch
it. You need to have that SD card with that firmware there on all the time.
Yep. And if you take the SD card out, move the camera, it starts up normally.
Wow.
And you haven't made any changes to it. Cool. So that's kind of cool.
That's nice.
So there's a file you store on that SD card that you wrote.
Well, that they wrote, yeah.
Wow.
Their program interfaces
this program
with the camera.
Here
interfaces with the camera, and then you can put scripts on there that you write as well, or download or whatever.
And then they have the other application. I think this is library. DC RAW. I think that's the library.
Mm-hmm.
And this is application. That's actually plug into Game RAW Studio.
Oh, are you kidding?
I don't know. RAW therapy, it sort of works and sort of doesn't work. I'm not sure what kind of license it is. It's sort of, you know, I tried a few times. It wasn't done. This is actually photo management. It's an album. Picasa, it's an album. And RAW View, I did try RAW View. And this was kind of funky. I think RAW View is old. Yeah. But what I want, what I'm doing right now is that I stick it in Picasa, and I adjust it in Picasa, and then you can export. You know, you don't have to export your own pictures, but if you want to actually save them, you export it, and then you have your RAW and then your JPEG.
Yep.
So that's what I'll do. And because I used to have actually two different programs, and I spent hours and hours on it, and you know, that I didn't do it. You see that. That I have picture up to here, and then from May last year, I didn't develop any pictures. I had to brew, you know. So that's what I do. I use Picasa, and it appears to be working quite well.
That's a Wine program, right?
Actually, I run through Wine, but you have a Linux zip package, so that that's a customized. But I run it through a regular Wine Windows program.
So
That appears to be working better than Linux version.
I thought like Google donated a lot of code to Wine because of their
Yes.
Either go through Wine through their stuff or go through your own Wine.
I see.
And that's what I sort of figure out, you know, that they already contributed to Wine, so I'll use Windows program. And it actually has more features. Windows programs has more features than Linux program. Let's say they have this upload this movie. You can actually upload movie to your Picasa, but you know. But Linux program, I think, doesn't have it.
I've been back and forth between Picasa and FSpot for the last year, probably. I think I've just settled on FSpot because it's easier to manage stuff. Even in here, you know, if you get a couple thousand pictures in here, you're going to be.
I have a couple thousand.
Do you actually can do anything with them though? I mean, it's just a bunch of pictures splattered in there. So.
Well, it depends. I actually keep it. I organize it by year and month.
Yeah, you've got to manually organize all your folders.
And that's
which is
actually I do like organizing my pictures. I don't like to have magic. That's why when I'm done with adjusting here, I will export those pictures and I will actually keep them.
That's why I settled on FSpot exactly is because you know what I don't want to manage them anymore.
So
I
what does FSpot do?
I can't keep up with it.
Does it like look at the dates on the images or in the
It does a couple things that I think are really nice. It tags all your imports as an import role that you can always search and find all the pictures you imported at any given point in time. It, like anything else, it keeps track of all the changes you've made to it.
Data that like the camera writes.
That's where it's a lot better is the actual EXIF data, and you can apply your own tags to it. So I think that's the organizational features of FSpot. I haven't seen anything that comes close to making it as easy to find stuff, organize stuff.
They're
getting a number of plugins for Picasa and other
things. The best program what I saw organizing as far as your album organization was Adobe, I think they call it Photo Album, something like that. But that was only for Windows. And I used to use it for some time. And I didn't actually find any program that close to whatever it was doing.
I have read that that's actually a really good program.
It is a very good program.
Yes.
If that would be on Linux, I would pay money for it. I would pay my $50 for it. Yes. So, cool. That's all.
iPhoto and OS X is pretty decent.
Can I run it?
Sure.
I mean, if I don't want to spend $59 for iPhoto,
make it happen.
Yeah.
So I can find like all the pictures of myself.
iPhoto, no offense to F-Spot or things. I mean, I like this.
Yeah, you need to do a man. You need to add a man.
It blows away anything Linux has, honestly.
They're there.
I know the hardware is expensive, but the hardware, you get what you pay for.
Together,
it's all high-end hardware. So if you have the money and everything, even iPhoto, iMovie, free apps that come with the Mac and everything.
Automatically
blows away anything
based on like date.
So,
like just
let's move on.
I want all the.
Well, seriously, can you name an app?
I absolutely do.
Is it based on the import?
I've used all three, and I would honestly love to see an iPhoto for Linux. I really would.
I don't have $2,000 for a computer, but I'm thinking about $3,000 brewing structure. So, you know.
If you
want to
get drunk.
Okay. Don't get drunk.
So yeah, it's got this timeline up here, and it's written in mono. So
that's not a very good demo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He just got Python.
I know. Shall we keep on going?
I got mono.
Yep.
Actually.
He got monetized.
He got mono.
There were a few applications. Last week we actually were talking about this Linux and CNC. So yep. We're talking about that. And then Adam last week set up this FTP server, really fast, with this GA. Can you say what it is?
G admin tools.
G admin tools.
God.
I don't know.
Yes, that's right. Right.
I didn't want to do it, but Gadmin do it what?
Gadmin do
it. Say it almost like you're swearing.
Gadmin tools.
Yeah.
Like that.
So he was saying it was good, and I believe him, you know.
There's some of it, I don't know. They're a little bit confusing, some of them. They're not the most intuitive interfaces, but they are interfaces to some config files that a layperson who hasn't worked with an FTP server might get really frustrated with. So, like I managed to get the server up and running and create different user accounts for it with access to different directories and some fairly complicated stuff I never... It would have taken me hours to sit down and read through the man pages or config file.
And then I uploaded file there, and then he quickly closed the port.
Yeah.
You know, the security now. As Steve Gibson couldn't come to his house. That's all he's doing.
Just come through the internet and pop
yeah.
on my computer.
There was some kind of article on how
no,
to...
No, I opened it wide open from forwarding.
How to transcode actual Linux video using Mancoder. Mancoder. Mancoder is good, but you need to know all these things, you know. So it's actually good, you know.
Pretty much all those other pieces of software use this in the background.
Yes, that's what it is.
There's only about two or three different encoder programs.
You know,
they're all just plugged in.
I bought a video actually, and it does have. There's not really. It's how you evaluate beer, you know. And there's not a lot of visual there. It's more actually audio. So, you know, if I would want to actually rip audio from the video, probably that's what I would use.
Yeah, this is really useful for that.
Yeah.
Is there a way to know when like an application like this, what libraries it's using?
Yeah, there's a Linux command.
So
I don't know what it is.
It's called give it up.
LD. LVD, is that it?
No.
LDD, print shared library dependencies. That might be it. So if you go LDD Mancoder, not found. I suppose I should check whether I even have it.
There is the, your package manager can tell you what dependencies it has.
Well, something kind
so
of.
If you could be that file, then it probably told you that it was hosed.
Yeah. Yeah, it was hosed. Because I saved the tags, so I converted the file.
That's a good question.
Last week we were talking about this create spaces. That's actually where I bought that. Somebody put it in their content, and I was able to buy it from there. So if you have a content you want to sell, this is actually on demand. You own the rights. They don't own the rights. They are actually telling you they don't own the rights.
Huh.
There was an article, how to write a Linux virus. Did somebody read this?
No, but it sounds interesting.
Even this week, actually, there was discussion about this, how to write a Linux virus. And I wonder, did you read about it?
Mm-hmm.
Give it up about that thing.
I read through it.
It's got to be more than one way to do it.
I don't know. I more just went straight to the comments, and everybody said, yeah, everybody knew about this like for 2 years. No one really cares.
Okay, so we are safe.
I think we're okay for now.
Is this Steve Gibson who is writing this article?
There we go. Yeah, it is. It is.
So
how
do you do it? Where is it? I didn't read it.
It was pretty much the same thing that happens in Outlook.
Oh.
Pretty much you send them an executable, and Outlook automatically, you know, executes Windows programs. And it was, I can't remember, Evolution or whatever.
I don't use Evolution.
Well, you're safe then. Could automatically open a launcher file. It would automatically open a launcher file and then execute.
So that's not how to write a virus.
It's
because
it's not root privileges,
though, is it? For Evolution.
Pretty much.
It doesn't have root privileges, though.
It only it can still wipe your home drive.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, who cares if it trashes your file system if your home drive is gone?
That's what you back it up.
40 hours!
Your iPhone is the remote.
Well, you run your browser as a different user.
Is it through...
It is the LDD command.
L what?
Open up a prompt. Five-second demo.
Can you get that to work with Boxy?
You know what? Name of a pro. You got a name of a program? Type still LDD space and whatever
it
is.
But it keeps
Mem folder.
Try again.
Mem.
Hang on.
If that's if you have it, you have it installed, right?
Yeah, I don't have it.
It has to be installed.
Let's see if I have it installed.
Like
GIMP,
trying to put
there, right?
Yeah, put
GIMP.
What?
LDD. You have to LDD. Do I have LDD?
Need a sudo?
No, I probably
have
to go to the Etsy.
No, LDD just doesn't search your path. It only searches.
Mine does. Or wait, oh yeah, go to user bin and then
USR where?
Bin. And then no slash.
It might work.
No forward slash. Just bin. Yeah. Yep. And then type LBB bin.
Bam!
There. And it gives you all the different libraries that the GIMP uses.
So you can enjoy yourself, you know, tonight when you get home. You can actually go and say, you can check it out.
Huh. Never knew that. That's
okay.
Yeah, this is awesome. I don't need this library.
That last week we were talking about this guy here. That I cannot say that.
Arduino?
Yeah. Arduino, whatever.
Yeah, what a weird name, huh?
Yeah, but it looks like it was working, so great. And then Adobe and Nokia pledge $100 million for Flash and Air. For those applications. So, well, that means that I guess we are going to have some applications there. Somebody has money, we'll have applications.
All right, another framework that we can support.
Well, Adobe is pushing Air for some time. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And it really hasn't gone anywhere, anyway.
There was that was the front article of Linux Journal this month. Was Adobe Air and all the apps that you can run on Linux.
Air is a really good idea. They just didn't integrate it well enough with any existing technologies.
You know, there was something.
Could be cross-platform. Could be good.
There was some kind of connection between Nokia and Fluendo. I read it somewhere this week, and I was surprised. I thought that Fluendo was on its own.
The only thing I'm mad about Fluendo with is we can only get what's their media player? Is that the Elijah? That's not the Elijah, is it?
Elijah.
The media players, yeah, they only have it packaged for Ubuntu or just plain old source code.
And I tried to compile it, and I gave up because it's using actually some kind of sub-libraries
Aren't packaged either, so you have to install those.
I take that back. I think you can get a dev file for it, but maybe it was in the Fedora, the fresh RPMs. So you've got the website up there, don't you? The Fluendo one? What's it? I forget how exactly to spell it.
Stop. Stupid Python program will end when
it's
called Control C.
Service Products.
Hang on. I'll see if it's in the repositories.
I don't see it here. Never mind. What else do we have there?
I tried to view that like multiple times and the website was down. And I just looked at it. Now it's back up.
I said too, this is the one thing I wanted to click on. And I kept going, there was someone's blog on their server at home, and I'm like, man, they tore their own thing down.
Yeah, someone PD.
Actually, this guy is from Linux Week Tech Show, and he's working a lot of with TV and media. So there's an article about that HodgePodge.
What is it?
It's I think it's high definition. Well, it's HodgePodge, so your capture card. I think that's what it is.
Is this
better?
Is that
better than the package?
It actually works. Is that something to run in a TV?
It's the hardware.
It's just a hardware cable.
Is it like a standalone capture device?
Yeah, it's just
an
external capture device. It's not. It's just the capturing hardware. It's not.
You have for your channel there now.
You know, that's a good concept, but they need to take it a step further and make it a fully fledged DVR unit itself. You know, make it its own standalone device, make it cross-platform, and make it show up as a NAT, and then you've got a good solution.
You're right. I've never been terribly impressed with HodgePodge.
I tried to
go with their TV tuner cards and PCI card, like an IDH or something like that.
I haven't had any problems with mine. Yeah, it just works.
Much to go, like, I would say a lot of people on Linux like HodgePodge because
yeah,
it works.
I have one of those, and then I have one of those HCTV 5500, the special high def card that's made for Linux.
Yeah.
And those two just work. I haven't had any problems with them, so maybe I'm lucky.
Yeah. There was a FOSDEM conference.
You know, I was really disappointed with this.
Wait.
They had the video. And you couldn't see the screen, and they had the audio, and they only had the audio on the left channel, and on the right hand channel they had full static, and the audio skipped about once every 4 minutes. It skipped like 2 or 3 seconds. I wanted to listen to it. I actually listened to 15 minutes worth of complete and utter crap. The crappiest sound quality ever because I wanted to listen to it and eventually I just gave up.
So did you get anything out of those?
Yeah, it was very interesting what they're doing with X.
Because the Keith Packard, whatever is his name, he's actually the head honcho. He works for Intel. And he's actually leading leading it for a project.
Yeah.
What is the overview of it?
The part that I had heard, it's an hour-long talk, so I only heard a part of it.
Okay.
I heard about the Graphics Execution Manager, which pretty much they're writing their own kind of embedded operating system into X that does management of memory and resources, where before they never had any manager. So they had the 3D, they had the 2D, they had all these different pieces, but they couldn't talk to one another. So if you wanted to do something in 2D and pipe it to 3D, you actually had to do it on the video card, offload it into main memory, and then reload it back onto the video card into 3D in order to transfer it, because there was no transfer between the different pieces. So everything was way inefficient when you wanted to talk to the different pieces in X. So they added this piece right in the middle that manages everything, manages caching and all that, and it provided for really easy ways to connect all of the different pieces together.
Was this the next thing that will come out, or is this a ways off? Or
I think it should be fairly soon if it's not already like in the works.
Okay, cool.
I don't know. That was probably towards the end of the hour talk.
Yeah, you know, because at some point, well, about half a year ago, the people are complaining that XORG is not doing a lot. You know, that there wasn't a lot of bugs fixing and that their release cycle was too slow and stuff like that. So, maybe they were just busy.
It was actually really interesting if you're interested in how it works underneath the hood, but the audio just kills it.
You're supposed to download the flash and then rip the audio off.
It wouldn't have fixed it because the audio was just bad to begin with. There were glitches in the audio. Well, that's what I did. I actually muted one channel on my sound card and listened to it.
Yeah.
But there was still a little bit of static, and the missing sections of like 4 or 5 seconds, it always occurred when he was saying something important. So it's like, what the heck did he say? And there's no...
you know, you'll never know what it said.
Yeah. Well, you can write him an email. Probably.
That was, I think, the first comment. Somebody needs to transcribe this and guess what he says every 2 minutes.
In how to, actually, we have a few about IP addresses, and there was some really interesting concept which actually got me excited. Nothing really gets me excited anymore. But what this guy, actually, there is a database behind it. And so here's actually the dump from a database. You have multiple tables. I think you have 5 tables. And what they do is how they, because towns or cities are assigned ranges of IP addresses, but it can be actually bouncing. So that's why you need to make a calculation on the IP address. And how they did it was that they got IP address and they took the first number, multiplied by 256, and then they added to a second number, plus they multiplied by 256, plus the third number. They throw away the fourth number because they were saying, well, all the fourth numbers are from the same geographical area. And then you got your result and you matched it against the database where you actually had your number, so you could actually do the range.
We do this on thesumopool.com. We actually use a database from a company called Maxmind.com, I think it is. They have a free version.
Okay.
It's only, I think, about 4% off accuracy from, like, the paid version.
Okay.
And, yeah, it's basically, I think, only about 2 or 3 tables. And, yeah, like you said, it's just the IP blocks.
Yes.
Since an IP address is just a one-sided integer, yes. You just calculate that and it goes in between. And it works.
Yeah.
Instantly.
Yeah, I
describe it.
I was very, you know, I'm sort of a data person. You know,
you can do that with GPS coordinates too. I've seen that done where they have like different items that are latitude and longitude, and then you can give it an SQL statement that will say, okay, I want everything within 50 miles of this latitude and longitude, and it actually does all the math and everything right in the SQL statement.
Sorry, again, that's just the backbone of our list of local site. That's how we call our shirts.
So if I need something like that, I'll come to see you.
Absolutely, that's what we specialize in. So much you
can pull. Not that I would want to pull something out of for free, but that's what is going to happen.
That's fine. No, we have a lot for.
You might get some beer.
You might get some beer. Yeah,
that's about.
That's.
So I was, you know, it. That this concept actually, it's I mean, you take a string and you convert it to a certain.
That database has got the latitude and longitude, right?
Yes, it does.
So does MaxMind. In case you check that.
Because this actually this dump, he's saying that he's going to update how accurate it is. So maybe he's not saying where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm. So your IP address is given out geographically. Is that the whole gist of this?
Sort of.
But then we were saying, how do you know? I'm charter customer. Well, I'm coming to from here. I go. I'm charter is in Kentucky somewhere there. You know? So from here I go actually on private network to Kentucky, and then I'm getting out in Kentucky to a public network. How does it know that I'm in here?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Oh, basically, like you can. Look up, like the way MaxMind or wherever you got this database from was like, you know, all the internet addresses are registered with a company or things like that.
Yes.
And they just assign them out to geographical, or they figure out what blocks are.
But doesn't it actually know where I come up? So isn't it actually, doesn't know that I'm coming from Kentucky instead of from Oakland?
Well, it knows that Charter is using, like, their business is basically to figure out there's this IP block.
Okay.
They ask Charter, where are you using this IP block? And
okay.
They would say, Eau Claire.
So then they okay. So that was
what's your URL again?
I think it's maxmind.com.
No, your company that you use that you guys created for
there
the local
is
business. For the
my company, the website I'm talking about is called listlocal.com.
Listed local?
And I'm kind of curious what city it'll put you in. It's not Eau Claire.
Maxima?
Probably
Maxima?
MaxMind. MaxMind. Or just type GOIP.
GOIP.
GEOIP.
MaxMind.
That's probably all you need.
So, like, I could use your site, for example, to look for all sources of broadband, you know?
Probably not.
Okay.
It's more real estate than vehicle listings.
Okay, something simple. Pizza.
You probably could, yeah.
Pizza.
Cool.
Very nice.
Yeah, but they have a, if you search for GYP, I think free or something, they have basically
GYP City, GYP Colony.
The results I found for pizza. It's positive.
Free open source. City. Because that actually, that's that thing, you know, here, it was actually the whole world.
Okay, yeah, so is this.
It doesn't get any process.
Yeah, I think their, the downloads are usually wrong. Until you start. They have a CSV version you can download.
It's as cool as Nintendo.
Whatever you want. Yeah. And they have a binary version, which may or may not be a little bit faster than
that. That one was dumped from MySQL that we run Oracle.
Oh,
it doesn't translate.
Just yeah, no, definitely not. So, you know, at least from here you can get a CSV version and then you know, process that into whatever can.
Yes. So if it's CSV, actually, I could, they call it external tables.
You could just
do that too. So what do you do from external table? Then you load it to regular.
Continue.
Right, yeah.
No, it's going to die because it receives a signal.
Does your site list at local.com, does it automatically go out and aggregate like businesses and stuff, or does it have to be like...
We have some third parties that do that. We're getting hopefully a business database, so...
It's like a giant yellow pages nationwide kind of...
Yeah, project. Exactly. We're just putting on some investors.
Do you do also the geolocation?
Yes, actually.
That's
what this is, basically.
We'll see you later. Yeah, but we're saying that's like 50 miles from here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have some custom software that does geolocation-based searches, but it's very easy to do even in SQL.
Okay.
It's basically look up the latitude and longitude.
Cool. Very nice. I learned something.
You have questions about it? Yeah, feel free to ask.
I learned something new. I'm excited about
this. This is how they know when you go to the Pirate Bay where that girl should be from.
Yeah, I was actually just going to say that. If you ever see those things that say, you know, Wisconsin or Grant, Wisconsin.
How did you know that?
She keeps following me! She's hiding behind that tree.
How did you know they do that?
And there are girls from Wisconsin that want to meet any of them.
Yeah, so we are definitely all off limits here.
So at the mall last week.
Well, come on, we're all geeks. We all probably have relatively intelligent jobs and employed and stuff.
Yeah, what?
It's not the bottom of the feeding, you know, post, so to speak.
I'm talking something.
I don't know.
Actually, that website, if I can get back to it, it had a lot of, you know, let's say, like, something is coming to my server. No, it's not this one.
Yeah, that one I wouldn't. That first one, blocking IP addresses, that may or may not be a good way to do it, depending on what you're trying to do. We actually had a situation where we get a lot of spam from, like, there's a lot of people in India and Cameroon and stuff like that. They're just, like, putting out spam classifieds and things like that. So we're toying with the idea of just, you know, blocking everything from outside the U.S. There would obviously be something false positive, but whatever. Doing it...
This guy actually had, let's say, like, he was, how deny allow countries from, so he was saying, if this guy is not coming from the location what I want, and he's appearing more than just once, you know, so then he was out, you were processing, and then you write into IP tables.
Yeah, the thing is with that, though, like, default IP tables, like, it depends how much you want to block.
Yes.
We wanted to block everything outside the U.S., and there are a lot of IP blocks. We're talking like in the millions of IP blocks that we're trying to block. The default IP table is going to do a linear search and all that, which is going to be slow. It's going to get slow.
Yes.
There are some patches for IP tables, and there are some other options that will do like a more efficient binary searches or different types of searches.
You just got to get multiple servers and organize them in a tree and have every server do a little chunk.
We have lots of servers.
I was just going to say, you have to start doing like clustering with some sort of database-based IP table that can do massive searches.
Well, you just need a more efficient search, not going through every single one.
Some kind of hash or something.
Some sort of index, yeah.
Like that. Yeah, specifically, the patches are a form of a binary tree, but they're significantly more faster.
So...
Yeah, it was interesting that actually it was about geolocations and IP addresses. It was more, you know, I found it interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really fun stuff. You can, you know, hook that up with, you know, Google Maps or various mapping services and do really cool stuff.
So you can pin those girls' pictures on your Google Maps.
Oh, one trick. One trick with the IP tables that doesn't really have anything to do with this, but it's kind of interesting. You can make your own, like, poor man's load balancer just using IP tables. What you can take is you just take the last digit. If it's even, go here. If it's odd, go here.
Yeah, like modulus based hash.
Yep. And it's just a simple load balancer, so you don't have to buy, you know, load balancer hardware if you're on a budget.
You like to spend money. Can you say something here?
I was just going to say, couldn't, I mean, theoretically, with the structure of the business, isn't Google Maps a competitor to what you're doing, essentially?
Not really.
I mean,
the market we're in, this is one of the sites we do. It's incredibly saturated. There's, I mean, the big ones, Yellow Pages, Yellow Book, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
And there's hundreds of small ones. But there's so many money doing it. So
kind of a server hardware do you have to support something like this in the background?
Right now, it's just, I think, two servers and a database server. We haven't really started marketing whatsoever right now. We're looking for investors, or we're talking to investors right now, really get marketing and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, really, you don't need a lot.
Mm-hmm. I was just curious what kind of pipe you need and what kind of server load you need to support and have especially with the large database of businesses.
We have a lot of problems. That's the thing. Businesses, we don't have a ton of businesses. Vehicles, we are one of the biggest, databases actually. Impressing. But getting back to what you said, we were doing it completely through SQL, and but then we converted some stuff to a more customized, very efficient search. Secret sauce. But
yeah, usually what they do with searches like that, they create a custom index.
Yep.
Like whatever. What do we have? We take Honeycomb.
For all of the
Indica.
Okay, and I think I've heard of that, and that's basically what we've created, a custom index, which we can do lookups very fast, which then talk to the SQL database, and we'll get on that. But yeah, I think we don't get a ton of traffic. I mean, we get a decent amount of traffic, I think.
What's
average? Maybe a megabit per second.
How many uniques do you have a month?
I can't say.
That's a secret.
That's a secret.
Okay.
That's less than 100.
Never mind. Let's keep on moving. There was an article about Zenity. I use Zenity a little bit, so there was an article about
that. That's useful. Very useful.
Sorry. You should really look into, like, if you wanted to start some advertising campaigns and you wanted to set up some, like, affiliate marketing or some pay-per-click campaigns or something, you should check out 7search.com or one of the lowest pay-per-click advertisers that beat out, I've been playing around with it, they beat out at Google AdWords 8-1 in price. And then, you know, I was using that as a gift to my dad for Christmas this year. He has a hunting and fishing business, and I gave him a campaign using 7search. And for, I think it was, paid $25 or $35, and it drove 700 clicks to his website. So
that's interesting. One thing, I'll just be real quick, but that we're looking for investors for us. We've actually made a very, very cool advertising platform product. Completely based on geolocation and things like that, where they can basically specify, I want to advertise within 20 miles of Eau Claire, 50 miles of Minneapolis, and things like that, within certain sections of your site. And that's one thing we're hoping to profit on. But that's another useful thing you can do with the geolocation.
I think the Facebook advertising model is pretty cool too, where you can do advertising on a per network basis, so
yes,
either per town or per state or per.
Yep, and that's actually, we have three tiers where it's within a radius or basically a bounding box.
Sure. It's less structured that way, but I mean, you get the idea.
I figured out how to block those annoying pictures.
Those
on Facebook,
like the side of the banner.
Yeah, the banner advertisements that are mining your data like mad.
Is it like with the Firefox add-on?
No, it's just an Opera. It's I actually just went in and from their ad server, I just included that in the list of
blocks.
Don't serve me stuff from here. And the ads magically went away.
Yeah, it's amazing how much quicker the site.
Yeah, it works and it doesn't flash at me anymore.
Let's say, like, when we are looking for geolocations, we are more looking for fraud.
Yeah.
You know, that's the concern.
Yeah, it's kind of ours. And, I know the MaxMind company, like, they used to really promote their GIP stuff, and now they're promoting fraud.
Yeah.
Which probably has to do with their GIP. I don't know what it has to do with, but maybe something to look into.
Well, filtering by location, assuming that anyone from outside of the U.S. is fraudulent.
Well, if you are doing business just within the United States, or if you are making
the
business
too,
just within Wisconsin,
proxy service,
and you are not shipping anywhere else,
so who are you trying
images
to
out and compress it?
I'm not trying anybody to block anybody, but I know at some point we had orders which they were coming from IP addresses from outside of the United States, and shipment was within the United States. So maybe the person was really fast. I doubt. So that was actually red flag.
Shipments from Cafe Press. Or is this something big?
It's something that I don't worry about. That's why you
need new shoes. That's why you need new shoes. You have to run back to the United States.
Yes, yes, from Nigeria.
And all the ads disappeared because there's only like 10 sizes for all the ads.
Captchas and things like that.
I literally have an image that's not the same
size about it, but there's
got to be
in various regions.
Exactly.
They have like
images
in size, probably 30.
They have
humans, and they're
all the ads disappear without
blocking.
I'm sure in Firefox
do that all day.
User styles too.
Yep.
User styles.
Work from home. What do you think that's going for? We have two more how-tos. We have automated Ubuntu server shutdown. I guess it doesn't probably have to be Ubuntu. It can be any server.
Is that one of those, things with the anvil hanging over your computer?
Absolutely.
Beautiful. Yeah. Row of dominoes that launch a little, arrow and cut the wire.
Have you ever seen those little plug-in timers?
I think this was more on weight on network. So
shut down your server if there's no computers to serve to.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen those plug-in timers that turn the power on and off?
Yeah.
Rather than plugging it into that, they just actually wire it and wrap it around the hard drive so that when it turns on, it just turns your hard drive into a magnet.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
That'll shut it down.
Magnets. And then there was something about SSH host key protection, which I don't think that I understood, but there was something about it. It was a long article, and if it's a long article, it has to be good. That's all right.
Yeah, that always annoys me when I change an IP address of a PC, and it's like, oh, somebody's trying to do something bad, I'm not going to let you in, and I have to go in and delete the line.
Yeah, there's much better tutorials than that, which are basically like three commands, but all our servers are only accessible by SSH keys and password. That's really the way to go.
Do you do both, or
some
just require
you
one?
You should do
other?
Both.
I know you should.
If you don't do both, I don't do both. It's annoying.
So you just got to have the host keys.
A blank. Well, I mean, you have to have a password, but it's a blank.
Blank password.
So.
Is that required based on your configuration of SSH? Because I've got it set up at home with the host key, and it doesn't require me to enter a password. It just
no. But you can. There's a configuration where you can only block anything that isn't sending a host key or an SSH key.
Okay.
And that's what we do because.
But it doesn't actually prompt for a password or. Your setup does.
Well, it'll always prompt for a password, but if it's a blank password, then it doesn't matter. I mean,
that must be a server configuration because I got one.
It's been a while since I have a script that just configures the servers automatically.
Okay.
So it's been a while since I've actually manually configured something, but it's possible to do it. Again. And it's so nice.
Yeah.
Cool. So are we almost done?
I got the three. Pendants or whatever, and I got the sword, and I got the moon pearl.
Triforce?
Wow.
The Legend of Zelda, the Missing Link.
Oh, Missing Link.
Link.
How about if we
sound off, right?
I think so. I don't know. I got it. I'm playing it. It's like awesome. I got to walk through on this phone. I'm like, what the heck is
it? Oh, okay.
Three pendants, and then you get the sword, and then I got to go back and...
The pendants are first, then you got to put together the...
Get the sword, and the sword.
So, not that I...
Once you get to the sword, you can get into the other dungeons then to for the actual tribe.
Which version of this? Which
the Super Nintendo version.
The Super Nintendo. Oh, yeah, okay.
It's a link to the past.
It is a link to the past.
The one, the Nintendo one, number two, oh my goodness, that was tough.
Good luck, though.
That was hard.
Are we done?
Yeah, the sound was. Yeah, it wasn't as good, but it was hard.
Everybody, Zelda is leaving. See you next week. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.